rated, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back, and that's all right. Jerry McLennan's going to join us momentarily, and as we wait for Jerry, a couple of different things that I wanted to slip in. I mentioned when we had Robertino. I mentioned at Delta, and there's the next 2 days. You've got. Tomorrow you got the My Trusty Cat, and today, where did it go? I had it here. Unbelievable. There it is. The My Trusty Cat, and today you've got the Jean Lafitte, the two two-year-old seven furlong races. At, you know, Delta's come out of the gate here with a steady parade of stakes action, you know, starting with the Be Connected, Speak to Me of Love, Bernard Chatters, and in the Lookout, Saints and Muskets, Alan Landry, Safi Joseph, Friday in the Treasure Chest with Gibberish, and Hunk of Burning Love with Broberg. We'll try to get to Broberg tomorrow, but today the action at Delta. 12:55 Central. The stake goes off at 3:39 Central, 4:39 Eastern. And tomorrow, the eighth race is the My Trusty Cat. You got seven in here. In fact, you got seven in both stakes. And today, they made Awesome Jerry. Safi Joseph actually has got a pair. Awesome Jerry and Drain the Clock. And then tomorrow, 8-5 favorite for Scott Geiner. Taylor's Tourist, so the two-year-olds today, and obviously, you know, we're at kind of that weird juncture. Not a lot of ovals, parks running today, and Mahoning Valley. Got some Mahoning Valley stakes, actually, to go over, and we got to get to Fairgrounds for later in the week and catch up on the start to there. They've had terrible weather to start the meet. Speaking of Awesome Jerry, Jerry McLennan is going to join us. And I was watching from afar on Saturday, watching the action at Aqueduct unfold. And first came a maiden winner in the fourth, a first-time starter, a two-year-old Spirit Maker. And Todd Pletcher sending that one out. And then came the stake win, Turned Aside, winning the Turf Sprint Championship. And both under the just hard-to-accept title of the estate of Paul Pompa Jr. And Jerry joins us. Jerry, I can only imagine what it was like down there watching you and Alyssa, you know, lead the horses in, and the, everybody on hand, your brother and everybody that was there. You know, congratulations, of course, but... you know, between the Thanksgiving holiday and, you know, everyone's continued shock and, you know, dismay that Paul is gone, had to be very emotional.
Yes, it was, Steve. You know, it was certainly a day that I thought I'd never see. But, you know, Paul, you know, he was a truly great lover of horses. He was a businessman. And first of all, he's a family man, you know. He was, you know, he's my cousin. His father and my father-in-law were brothers. And I've known him most of my life, not just for the horsing business that he got into in 2000. But it was an emotional day. Just so happy that, you know, his whole family was there. And it just seemed like somebody came down from the heavens and got those horses over the wire.
Jose Lascano aboard for both. And, you know, the first, in fact, neither one was, you know, close to being a favorite. You know, over 6-1 on Spirit Maker and 5-1 on Turn to Side. Although Turn to Side was I know that Andy liked Turn to Side. There were quite a few people at the price that thought that Turn to Side was well worth, you know, coming in off of that Kentucky Downs try. I hate to ask this question as part of the backdrop. I don't know if you saw the tweet I put out, you know, after the stake win, but what's the plan, Jerry? I know that you have got mares to deal with, and then there's the existing stock. How are things going to be handled?
Well, according to his estate and his will, Paul wants to have all the horses put in the dispersal sale.
Yeah.
So we're going to disband the entire stable.
Wow.
It's pretty tough. You know, we've been working at this for years. He has a tremendous stable right now. It's, bittersweet with the winds, but we have a dispersal sale set up for January at Keeneland.
Wow. How many broodmares are involved?
Yeah, well, right now we have 13 broodmares. We have 10 weanlings. We have 16 racehorses. And we're going to have 9 yearlings headed to the 2-year-old and training sales in March.
Wow. I don't even know. It's been hard. Every time one of the horses shows up, Jerry, I mean, it's hard enough to accept, you know, and I made the comment that I was hoping that, you know, that there'd be some horses to campaign, you know, for a while yet. But it's going to be hard to accept when that last runner goes out in that jacket.
Yeah, it will. It definitely will. I mean, it's been a long run, 20 years. And, you know, this is his wishes. So, you know, I have to abide by that.
No, understood. And you know, there's some very productive mares that are going to, and I'm sure, the majority of them are probably in foal, right?
Yeah, well, you know, Mary's Follies, of course, she threw out the Japanese horse that we sold to them. You know, she was in foal to Curlin, but she missed and was aborted. But we have a couple of nice ones. We have Lyrical Moment. We sold the baby last year by her to Bob Baffert, the horse Penner. He was out of Curlin. We brought her back from Dahlia Dorlo. So she's really nice. And we have a really nice Union Rigs called Saranda was a nice mare. And most of them ones were Connect because he was supporting his stallion.
Right.
So we have that 10 of them with Connect. So, you know, it's just a shame that he's not going to be able to see a Connect baby run. You know, all of us, we'll see them, but hopefully he still carries on.
You know, part of this that has to be really anguishing, and when it comes to the bloodstock, I mean, obviously, it's anguish that, you know, that Paul's gone at all. But he had really, from the Big Brown days, he had kind of, learned some lessons and I remember he and I discussing this, and him, I think we even had it on air. We may have had this conversation and him talking about kind of, you know, getting overextended and having too many mares and then paring back. And it really felt like with the sale, you mentioned Mary's Follies and the $1 million seller, it felt like he had really found a good niche and a good balance of how many brood mares to carry and augmenting the stock, you know, with homebreds, like Turn to Side. And having just sold the business too, to be able to really enjoy things in retirement. I mean, that's what just seems so unfair about this.
Yeah, no, Steve, you know, this has been a shock. I mean, you know, just too young, you know. But, you know, he has basically, you know, the horses he has now, that was going to be it. He had his 12 mares. But, you know, other than that, I mean, what could we say? I mean, we lost a great guy too young, you know.
Yeah. What even horses, so like all of these that are campaigning now that are racking up wins, I mean, they're going to be available. Country Grammar, what's Country Grammar's status?
Yeah, we have Country Grammar on the farm. We're going to bring him back for the four-year-old campaign at Gulfstream. And, you know, it's really like I can't go against his wishes in the will. I mean, and the family agrees with that. And, you know, every horse is going to be for sale. That's just going to be it.
Well, the mares particularly are, and of course you mentioned Connect, and when we were there that day with the Derby for, well, was it with
Derby? My brother was there.
Who? Yeah, I was going to say who won that. Who won the? It was Ben, right? That was him.
Yeah.
Connect. Yeah.
He beat the three Triple Crown winners in the one race.
That's right. That's right. That's right, and was a bit of a price too that day.
To
have the opportunity, I mean, these horses and of course the stallions and obviously Big Brown, the name is going to be, you know, on the breeding line, and you know, his influence on the game, it will continue, you know, in perpetuity.
Yeah, I mean, the colors were on the board for Connect winning the Cigar Mile in the paddock, and
yep,
we all around it and took a picture. It was really emotional, you know.
Yeah.
Really emotional.
Yeah. Well, I guess you know, the only missing link on Saturday would have been if Chad had been able to send out a winner too, and you know, with the horses with Todd and with Linda and Chad, who else has anybody else have horses right now?
Just those three. I mean,
those three.
And they've been doing an incredible job. I mean, you know, we haven't sent out too many runners this year. We only like 39 starters, and we won almost $1 million in purses. I mean, just incredible job.
Amazing.
The trainers been doing, and, you know, with the limited stock that we sent out this year. You know, we're really looking forward to next year. We have so many nice horses, but, you know, it'll be a tough year.
I'm sure there'll be, you know, are there some unraced 2-year-olds yet that are going to turn up?
Chad has a Nyquist one he loves. He's training down in Florida right now. We may run him in one race before the sale, you know. And we have another one up here in New York. Chad may run. You know, he's looking for a spot for him. And Todd still has a 2-year-old man one time. He's going to run him back Saturday. You know, we're going to get the opportunity to show the horses off a little bit, you know.
Sure.
This way, you know, when they take to the sale, you know, they've all been training well. Just, and it's a tough thing.
No doubt. No doubt. Well, Saturday, I imagine Saturday, the last chance for everybody to be together at the racetrack like that.
We have two 2-year-olds right now, and then one older horse is going to run in New York, and then possibly we have one down in Florida with Todd, the filly that ran fourth in the Long Island, I think it was. She's 1X eligible. We're going to just run her there. And maybe there's 2 with Chad if we get him ready. You know, he's worked 3 times, so he may not be ready. If he is, we're going to run him.
Yeah, but I just imagine that, you know, having Alyssa and the boys and, you know, and everybody in one place won't happen, you know, that way.
We'll see. Well, you know, it's it's emotional for everybody that's so, brokenhearted. It's a difficult period right now.
No doubt. Well, Jerry, we've had many opportunities and several people, since the news, and I knew that at some point we'd would get a chance on air to pay appreciation, and I've said any number of times how good he was to me personally, and what an honor it was to campaign Toy Cannon together. I mean that's a picture that I'll treasure. But even going back to right at the beginning when I introduced myself to him, and he said, "Oh, I listened to the show, and you're always so nice about it." Was Backseat Rhythm was the first horse that we sort of together, and he said, "Oh, you always say such nice things about me and about my horses," and of course it was because I sort of knew of him through Gary Siaka and.
Right.
And their association and the success that they had. And I always, even before I got to know him at all, and just held him in high regard. It's just such a terrible loss for the sport and for everybody beyond the sport.
Thank you, Steve. I mean, he was a very classy person. He tried to treat everybody, the same. And he's missed by all people. Went to Aqueduct. Everybody was crying,
Yeah.
All the workers, they came over me crying, It's just tough.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I know his legacy will last. I mean, he's going to have those Connect babies, and the family's going to, just stay into that part of the business. If it's, hopefully Connect becomes a good sire.
Well, from that standpoint, that's a great point. You've got seasons, right, to Connect to be able to use?
Yeah, well, right at this point, because we're selling all the mares, we're going to let the syndicate take care of this year's seasons, and maybe down the road, if I have some friends or somebody, I could speak to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
in the future, we're going to look at that.
I thought it was just so special, and I knew right away on Saturday night that I had to have you visit, because it was something that even under such a such a tragedy, it just made you feel, you're able to feel good while you're feeling badly. I mean that's.
Yeah, that's what it was like. There's some, so happy, they're so sad, the crying, but it was good for the family to get out and enjoy the day, in a hard couple of weeks, obviously.
Well, especially the holiday, and it's going to be tough to get through Christmas, and anytime there's the family seasonal gatherings, it's going to be
right.
Takes a while. Well, those will be a couple of photographs to have together to treasure. And Jerry, I appreciate you visiting and speak for players and fans and stakeholders and everybody, just saying how much we'll all continue to miss Paul and honor his legacy around the game.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Jerry McLennan, everybody, and a special circumstance on Saturday with a pair of wins and that very familiar white, red, and green jacket of Paul Pompa. Going to stay here and have Mike Welsh join us. And I don't know how easy it's going to be to lift the mood because a racetrack is gone as of Saturday, and Calder Racecourse. For any number of horsemen, horse players, owners, you name it, racing officials and people that work at the racetrack, they called her home, and so many good horses passed through the gates, or, you know, came down to run, whether it was Summits of Speed or whatever opportunities came through Calder. Mike Welch has spent a good part of his career. And Mike, I know that it wasn't, you know, the place was pretty much gone physically, but it still had to be a little difficult these last couple of weeks and then leading up to Saturday.
Yeah, you know, it had a lot of good memories to it. It was one of those places that you thought would just never go away. And, you know, as the reality that was going to happen kind of hit you this year, you know, there was always thought there would be some more and more reprieves down the road, you know, like the condemned convict would stretch out for a long time. But, you know, barring something of a miracle now, this looks like the end. Saturday was the last day. And, you know, obviously the place with no grandstand and whatever, it's certainly a shell of its former self. But it was still good to have the races over there and be able to go over there and see the old place every fall for a little bit. But, you know, it's over now. So all you can do is remember it as it used to be, which to me was a great place. And I got there, you know, a long time after a lot of my colleagues did. And after some of the older glory days had gone by, but certainly plenty of great memories and great horses passed through there while I was there.
Talk about some of that, actually. And, you know, a lot of people, I mean, for me, it was Summit of Speeds and, you know, any number of top-level sprinters. But there were also great two-year-olds that got their start and developed there. And then there were horses that came in and had opportunities at Calder.
Well, Holy Bull was the first great one I saw right after I got there, actually. And you know, he came in for the In Reality Stakes, being a Florida bred. And, you know, we kind of knew then how good he was, but and the potential that was there. And, of course, didn't get to show it in the Derby and whatever because of unfortunate circumstances, but still a great horse to follow then, see him in his early days, and then follow him beyond that and watch his accomplishments down the road, many of them over across the way at Gulfstream Park. But he was the first one I remember, and the other one being off the top of my head being Barbaro, who won the Tropical Park Derby, I believe.
Right.
Was there.
Right.
Yeah. And on the grass before switching over to the dirt, and the rest was history.
The one part of the Calder legacy that, you know, the sales has to be included because, you know, the two-year-old and training sale scene was always really fun there. And I think Bobby Humphreys got to be, you know, Bobby's got to be appreciated as part of this too. And, you know, he brought a certain
yeah,
flair, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bobby was a pretty unique individual and an innovator, obviously. And he was the big part, along with Mike Cronin and, you know, Ken Dunn, too. A pat on the back for initiating the Summit of Speed, which in its day was quite you know, an afternoon of racing. That was back at a time when, you know, sprinters were kind of not appreciated. The purses for big sprint races were not that high around the country. And here they came along and gave away $500,000 in a couple of races, you know, for the Smile and the Princess Rooney for the boys and the gals. And, you know, during a time of the summer here, that was usually just all two-year-olds, and kind of a, you know, a dead time as far as getting horses of a national, you know, known nationally down here. Here they came along with this event and drew, you know, got, you know, so many horses that went on to, whether they won the races here or not, they still went on and won the Breeders' Cup Sprint, won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. You know, that and that was mostly Bobby Humphrey. I got to give him credit for that. And that was one of racing's biggest losses when we lost Bobby. Way too soon, obviously.
Well, and you know, the specialty, the concept of specialty days in you know, in a variety of manner, whether it was the two-year-old, it came up the other day when we were talking about the Marty referenced Bobby Umfrey on Friday, talking about the Stars of Tomorrow card at Churchill and how, you know, Bobby had conceived of the all two-year-old card, and then there was the crazy mix-up day where you had
they ran their two races at the same time.
That was the craziest,
which I thought was the stupidest idea that I've ever seen. It's a recipe for total disaster, but it sure drew a lot of attention, and I think it was actually maybe even replicated in a couple of places. I'm not so sure, but I believe so. But that was quite an afternoon when we saw our first you could bet the Daily Double, the turf and the dirt running at the same time.
I do want to reach out this week to Bobby Newman, who I think of, but also, you know, I saw where Peter Aiello came and you know, closed out with the race call and talked about Phil Georgeff and you know, who else, I mean, from the training side and the other personalities.
You said Phil Georgeff. You meant Phil Saltzman, obviously.
Phil Saltzman, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. You had Frank Gomez, obviously, who developed so many great horses here and then kind of sent them up north to continue their careers. And he's the first name that comes to mind. I wrote a story this week. I wrote three stories this week focusing on trainers that are still around here now that were, you know, long time called the people. Kathleen O'Connell, obviously. Eddie Pleasa Jr., whose father, Eddie Pleasa Sr., was the second trainer through the gates when the track opened in 1970, you know, and I forgot to ask him who the first one was. And then Ronnie Spatz, who, you know, came and won the last feature race here the other day. He'd been here for almost four decades himself.
Wow.
So, and then there was all the, you know, the national sports celebrities that made their way over here, obviously being located right next to Dolphin Stadium and Marlins Park for a long time. Don Shula used to hang out here quite a bit. I remember Brian Cox used to hang out in the press box with us. And for all his surly reputation on the field, he was disliked by fans everywhere for his antics on the field. He was the nicest, you know, most friendly guy you ever want to meet. He'd come to the races. Of course, Paul LaDuca, when he played for the Marlins, and then would come into town for the Mets, would hang out here before or sometimes after the games. That's where I got to become friends with Paul. He was here a lot. Pete Rose used to hang out here all the time after he'd retired. This was a place he liked to frequent and play the races. So we got to see a lot of national celebrities here as well. So, you know, it was quite a place, and it really is sad to see it go. I mean, it was a great circuit back then. You had the 9 months here and then the 3 months either at Gulfstream or Hialeah. By the time I got down here, it was pretty much just Gulfstream and Calder. Before that, obviously, Hialeah was in the mix. I got here right at pretty much the end of the Hialeah being in the national spotlight. And the two-year-old racing was really what it was all about, you know, the in the being in proximity to Ocala and the breeding country there. The two-year-old program here was second to none. And it's also where I got my start clocking horses, too, here. And, you know, watching six or seven horses break out of the gate in the morning and then seeing five or six of them come back in the sixth race a week later, that was always kind of interesting, the same bunch. So, but I owe my clocking career off to that, starting out in the fourth floor with Joey Savage. The two of us clocking the horses in the morning, especially all the two-year-olds. It was a lot of fun.
I'll throw out a couple more, and I only, you know, have had the last 15 years, and really the two barns that I would get the chance to go visit and specific horses, you know, Marty and Carla Wolfson, who, you know, had a parade of nice horses come through over, you know, over in a nice extended period. And also, you know, how I latched on to Benny Stutz and Smooth Air, who was based at Calder.
Yeah, he was a little bit cantankerous, but he was a tremendous horseman, and obviously Marty had all that success here over the years, won some Breeders' Cups, and was one of the leading trainers here for much of my tenure, early tenure here, and we got to be pretty good friends, he and his wife Carla, too, and my fondest memory of Marty and is the way he would go around after training hours and feed all the stray cats on the ground. That was one of his passions, was saving the cats, he and Carla both. So he went to visit them at the farm, and I can't tell you how many they had there as well. So, Marty, that was a big loss when Marty kind of dropped out of the game here. I don't know, it's got to be 5-6 years now, but happily things worked out well for him. He's working for, last I heard, he was working for Ken McPeak down in Ocala. I assume he's still there. It's countless the number of trainers that came out of here and had such an impact on the national stage.
Well, and speaking of which, we can transition as part of the conversation. Just got a couple minutes more with Mike before Kim Weir joins us from TRF. And Mike, I started the conversation this morning, all the visits, with Gustavo Delgado Jr. and Bodie Express, who finally everything went right.
Yeah, and I think he was starting to get the reputation as being strictly a Gulfstream Park West horse. And, of course, all the antics earlier in his career. I mean, sometimes it takes horses a little while to get it, and to mature. And we always knew he had the talent, but mentally he had his issues. So I was really happy for them to see that horse win like he did and do it on a national stage, not just on a local stage. So that's terrific. And, now we got King Guillermo coming out of here, going up to New York this weekend for the Cigars. So we'll see if he could continue the Calder mystique, although he's stable now at Gulfstream, but continue the South Florida and win another grade one this weekend for the locals.
On that topic, what is the timetable in terms of how much longer the facility will be available as a training site?
At the moment, the deal is through the end of March. I think all the horsemen, I was talking to Kathleen about it the other day. They got a notice that they have to be out of there by April 1st, except for some exceptions where I'm guessing it would be horsemen that are stable there that maybe are going to Monmouth. They won't be able to get, or other places up north that won't be able to get in there on April 1st. They might let them stay a few extra days. That's what it sounded like to me. But basically right now, the end of the lease and the end of the agreement with Churchill is March 31st, and that'll be the end.
Have you, and similarly as part of that conversation, I know people were speculating on the potential to do something even at Hialeah. What's your early read on how Gulfstream, they can't possibly utilize that turf course for 12 months a year?
No, my early read, and again, this part speculation and part third-hand information, I don't think they've made any final decision yet. But, I think they're just going to have to soldier through those 2 months here and make the best of the situation as far as either a sharp reduction in overall races or just trying to run a dirt meet if they can with whatever races they could fill on the dirt, or maybe a turf race or two. Now, last year, I obviously I'm not here in the summertime, but I believe they shut down the inner portion of the turf course here 2 months before the end of the meet. So the inner part of the turf here is actually at 4 months to regrow and regenerate. They used only the outer half of the turf course for the final couple of months of the summer meet. But, that would be my best guess here, that they'll still continue through the summer and then into the fall, but with a sharp reduction in the schedule the last couple of months, that we would be over at Calder West, maybe running 3 days a week, 8-9 races a day, and trying to go with, if not a total main track schedule, there's as many main track races they could fill, and just run a couple of races on the turf. Or maybe if they let the inside grow for a couple of months, 2-3 months, they could switch back over there and give the outside the last month. I don't know. This is just kind of speculation on my part. But I think, you know, unless something comes up. I just don't think Hialeah is viable, and I'm guessing they're just going to have to make the best of it and run over there. Either, if not 12 months a year, then, you know, maybe part of the plan would be to shut down a month and not run in November. I'm just guessing here, though. So, but I think you're going to see a year-round schedule now at Gulfstream, unless something crazy pops up that I don't, you know, hear anything happening in that regard right now.
Well, speaking of running a Gulfstream, the first 3 days of cards are drawn Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and the winter season getting ready to get going. Some early thoughts, Mike, just kind of setting the stage?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to see much of a change in the racing for the first couple of weeks as we transition over. We're just now starting to see, you know, horses coming in from up north for the most part. I saw a couple of Dale Roman's horses on the track today, but I think they're here to run on Claiming Crown Saturday. The northern stables are going to start coming down now. I just got off the phone with Mike Lakeau. He thinks it'll take three weeks before we start seeing, you know, a lot of these horses in the entries. Chad Brown does have one in the entries on Wednesday, but it'll be a slow transition, as always, in the month of December. And, you know, by January, then, you know, you'll see the major difference. The purse, the turf, the stake schedule, the purses have been reduced a little bit. You could see it. The Florida Derby's 800 this year. The Claiming Crown races, you'll see, you know, you'll get your first wind of that. They're cut down this year. And the reason for that is to just try to maintain the overnight purse schedule the rest of the year. I mean, there's so much uncertainty on what to expect. There'll be no fans allowed when we open. It'll just be owners, I think, and invitees among the major players of the you know, the track's major players. But that'll be a minimum amount of on-track people. And when your on-track handle's down, you know, it affects your purses. So the major thought was to cut out a couple of stakes, reduce the purses in some other stakes, and try to put that money over to the overnight purse schedule. We don't know how long this is going to last. Obviously, we could go another whole meet without any significant on-track handle, and obviously that will be a burden on the purse structure.
Well, and speaking of the stakes schedule, so that everybody gets a quick read, Claiming Crown starts things. That's become, you know, a bit of a institution on the calendar. And then second Saturday on the 12th, you got things like the Fort Lauderdale and the Harlan's Holiday, the Rampart, Sugar Swirl, and My Charmer.
Right.
Tropical
no Caribbean
Park,
Classic this year.
No.
Obviously the
Travel.
Sunshine Millions is, you know, nowhere near what it used to be. The one traditional event here early in the winter that we have is the Eclipse Awards. We won't have those this year. That's going to be done virtually, so we're losing that. And again, you know, if you look at the winter stakes schedule, as we go through the winter, you'll see the purses are reduced slightly. The Flock Derby is 800. Now, granted, last year, I think it was 750 or 800 last year, as they reduced it the 12th hour because of the pandemic, but normally that's always $1 million, but not this year. It's going to be 800. So, you know, we'll just have to kind of play it by ear. The two variables that we have no control over are, you know, Gulfstream has no control over is the weather, which was horrendous during the Gulfstream Park West meet, 90 lost days due to rain on the turf course, and the effects of the pandemic. Who knows which direction it's going to go? Hopefully it'll all go for the better. You know, maybe by the first of the year, fans will be allowed back here. I don't see it happening before that. But it's just uncharted waters as far as that goes.
Well, March 27th, Florida Derby Day. Just so happens Fountain of Youth Day, February 27th. And the three-year-old picture, of course, one of the real highlights of the winter. The Holy Bull is January 30th. So there's the sequence of the major three-year-old action, plus the other divisions, three-year-olds, three-year-old fillies, three-year-old on the turf as well for male and female and all the others. Mike, looking forward to a good winter and at the same time, you know, very much very much thinking about what Calder meant to so many people for five decades, essentially, and was a very viable and an important part of you know, American racing for half a century.
Yeah, I was glad I got to go over there on Saturday for one last day, and you know, it's gone now. So it was a big part of my life, and more so for so many others down here. So that's sad to see it go. I also hear Scarborough Downs might have had its last day on Saturday as well.
It yeah. did. It did. I mentioned it to start the show, and it hadn't occurred to me that you would have some appreciation for Scarborough.
I did, but that was the one New England track. Of all the tracks up there, I never made it to Scarborough Downs. But it sure had a rich history and so many great stories. The New England horsemen that might have cut their teeth there, too. So, you know, that's another institution. It was an institution while I was there, although I never made it up, quite made it up that far into May. I didn't have enough mosquito repellent. To go to Scarborough Downs.
We're going to save Scarborough for. I've tried to reach Mike Sweeney, and but Seth Merrow absolutely spent. Really
yeah, no, Green Mountain was as far north as I made it, so never quite to Scarborough.
Well, Mike, I appreciate it, and we'll start to look forward to some visits on a regular basis as the season gets going. Wednesday at Gulfstream, Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch on your Twitter machine. Mike, thanks. Mike Welch, folks. 10 minutes to noon on this Monday. It's been almost nonstop, including visits with Gustavo Delgado Jr. and Robertino Diodoro, Rich Migliore, Jerry McLennan, and Mike Welch. Will close out these last 5, 6, 7 minutes with Kim Weir from the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. And, you know, we had Thanksgiving Thursday, we had Black Friday, we had Cyber Monday, and tomorrow Giving Tuesday. And so we're going to have a series of visits this next couple of days to, you know, give you ideas of how you can contribute, and people you know, very conscious of donation opportunity tomorrow particularly. And there's a few confluences happening in regards to TRF. Kim Weir, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Happy post-Thanksgiving to you. Hope your holiday was great.
It was. We had a nice Thanksgiving, small group. I managed to cook for, 12 to 14.
That's
even though there was four of us. So the food has been, we actually did okay. I did make turkey soup, so there's still probably a couple more servings of turkey soup to be had the next day or two.
I think that's what's happening here tonight. My husband did something similar. He cooked for 10, and there's two of us, so it's a nice weekend of turkey eating.
Exactly. Well, it's also a big opportunity for people to give. There's been all kinds of things, particularly if you're Twitter users, Twitter-friendly. You've seen any number of auctions, online auctions, and various mechanisms that are utilized as fundraisers. That includes TRF and, of course, the hay drive. I want to bring back around. You and I talked about it last month, and I want to revisit that. And then there's the whole Giving Tuesday concept. How can people contribute to TRF here over the next little while?
Well, you're so, so kind to let me come and chat about these things, Steve. It is the giving time of year, and we know that in our ways of giving thanks and then our ways of giving seasonal gifts to our friends and family. But it is also a big, big time for all of us in the nonprofit world, and especially those of us who take care of horses. So it is a confluence. There are, in fact, three things concurrently happening in the wild world of TRF to try to not have it be confusing. I would say one of them finishes today. So I think I'll start there. We have our TRF online holiday auction. I've actually realized over time this is the longest continuously running fundraiser for the TRF, because this is how it all started with some of those amazing, those stars of the racing industry like Penny Chenery and Mary Lou Whitney and Eleanor Pena, who gave goodies that we auctioned off to raise money. And that's really how I think the first fundraiser at Belmont was, in fact, an auction of sorts. So here we are. Now we run it on eBay as a reflection of the times. And it closes tonight at 6 o'clock. So I would just say that for a first point of our agenda is tonight everything gets exciting. All the final bids come in, and it closes at 6 p.m. It's easy to find on our website. There's a button right at the top that says online auction. So please feel free to check that out. And I'm happy to chat more about that. But that's the first thing on my list. And anything I can clarify, let me know, Steve.
No, go ahead. Run through. We got about three,
okay.
4 minutes.
Okay, perfect. So that's the first one. Second one is, as you kindly led into, tomorrow, Giving Tuesday across the world. In fact, really a global motion or endeavor is this Giving Tuesday. And for us, we're focusing on a very specific part of our budget, and that is the hooves of the horses. So our theme for tomorrow is the hoof makes the horse. And in fact, we're trying to raise 3 months worth of our farrier fund. We have more than 15 farriers across the country that take care of thousands of hooves, four per horse. And so the goal for tomorrow is 15,000 in one day. And we are aiming for as many new and modest gifts as possible. This is what's so great about Giving Tuesday, is that $10, $20, $25 is what we're looking for from as many people as we can get. And that's also right at the top of our website. Giving Tuesday 2020 is easy to reach there, and we'll be all over our social media. And then third, last but not least, because it's sort of the biggie, it's the biggest number in our entire budget. It's the hay that we raise the funds to feed our big, big herd. And we are doing really well on our hay drive. We have a $60,000 goal, which will then be matched by a wonderful longtime donor of ours. The Santulli Family Foundation has matched the $60,000. Once we hit that, we will get another $60,000 and hit our $120,000 goal. We're currently at about $47,000 in, so we're making great progress with a few weeks here to go. So that's my story. It's a lot of exciting stuff and a lot of thanks to every single individual who thinks to give a gift.
Outstanding. And of course, all the information, trfinc.com, and
let me correct you there, Steve. It's trfinc.org.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. The hay drive, which we talked about, and I thought the farrier, the hooves concept is important. I mean, and gives everybody an idea that, there's more than just a question of feeding the horses. I mean,
yep.
How many times a year do they get their teeth checked?
Yep, they get their teeth checked and then floated, which is like getting filed twice a year. And their hooves are done for 4 to 6 weeks, every 4 to 6 weeks. So we're going to use tomorrow to educate folks a lot about, just share some facts, fun facts about hooves. There'll be many flowing tomorrow.
Well, and we'll send along as many reminders as possible, and the auction aspect as well, and whatever anybody can do, every little bit counts. I mean, how much is, to give everybody an example, how much is one bale of hay right now?
Yeah, one bale of hay is, we usually say that's about $15 for a bale of hay.
There you go.
Let me just double check my facts there. No, bale of hay is $5. It's a bag of grain is $25. So
there
these
you go.
Little dollars really make a direct impact. It's absolutely true.
Well, and we talked about, where are you? You do have the link, the text link.
I do, and I'd love to try that with your audience, Steve.
Go ahead.
Experiment. So it is to text for our hay drive, 855-202-2100, text hay drive. You can choose your amount at that point, but 855-202-2100, text hay drive. See what happens. We'll see if anybody does that. We'd love to see if it works. Will it be absorbed?
Well, and it, years ago, you would text you know, to a five-digit number, and it would instantly, you know, take $5 charged to your phone bill. That was successful for a long time. This takes you to the TRF website, where you can then, if you can give 20, if you can give 15, whatever, $5,000, buy a half truckload. It would be well received. 855-202-2100 is the number, and you text the word "Hey Drive." I'll send out that link too. But at the same time, if you just, trfinc.org has everything we've talked about, and anything you can do, folks, to help the industry's largest post racing herd is managed by the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Kim Weir, I appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Steve. Wishing you all the best. Take care.
I appreciate it. Kim Weir, everybody, who's done such a great job. Mike Welch was with us before that. Jerry McLennan. Rich Migliori with another rollicking. These MIG visits are on Monday. By the time we get around to horses, it's too much fun. Robertino Diodoro and Gustavo Delgado Jr. as well. We've got plenty as the week unfolds. We've got a lot more to do in terms of recapping. I got to get Mark Glatt. Glatt won 3 yesterday, including the upset beer can man. Talk to you in the morning.